Dr. David Smith has worked with teenaged addicts since 1967, when he founded the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic in San Francisco. He's still the clinic's medical director. He's also medical director of the California State Department of Alcohol and Drug Programs and the past president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. I asked what he thought was behind the current heroin epidemic and what's been described as heroin chic.
I started the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics in June of 1967, and this is basically the third heroin epidemic that I have been through. And there always seems to be a cultural alteration that seems to start it. In the 1969, 70, 71, it was when all the Vietnam vets came back strung out from heroin. In addition, every time you see an upswing in stimulants like amphetamine or cocaine, every stimulant abuser is a potential heroin addict. And the thing that's real popular now is speedballing, which is the combination of cocaine and heroin or amphetamine and heroin. So there's these transition points. The heroin chic, I think in part got started around the smoking of heroin. Heroin is the ultimate rebellion. They lied to us about other drugs. Heroin can't be as bad as they say it is. Only the weak get addicted. And I started seeing it around things like models. They would smoke heroin, throw up, feel good, and swear they'd never stick a needle in their arm. And then suddenly they tried to stop and were junk sick. And then they stuck a needle in their arm.
You mentioned models. Do you think that for some young people, heroin is the ultimate diet drug?
Oh, yeah. Heroin is a marvelous diet drug. When you use, you throw up and you feel good, and it can kill your appetite. And, you know, the that heroin chic, it got started around that whole concept of being, you know, thin and kind of emaciated and... I think that helps set a cultural reference point for the middle and upper class. The majority of heroin addicts, you know, are the hardcore street addict, which is what we treat here at the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics. But when you're talking about an epidemic, you look at new users, and the new users is stretching into the middle and upper class where it kind of disappears. For example, our Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics has a waiting list of about 400 of uninsured heroin addicts that don't have any money waiting for treatment. And that gives the impression that that's where all heroin addiction exists. My wife and I also have a small private practice of people that won't come into public programs, and we're finding that there's a lot of heroin in the middle and upper class that's hidden. And it doesn't take the character initially of the street addict.
Is this the first time that you've seen weight loss as one of the reasons to try heroin?
I would say it's a bigger aspect of it now than it has been in the past.
What are some of the other things that are new about this particular heroin epidemic?
I think the entry point being potent smoking of heroin and the blatant marketing of that entry point to young people. In other words, if you recall the cocaine epidemic, it first started around cocaine freebase, which you had to get some cocaine, you had to get apparatus, you had to freebase. That's how Richard Pryor, you know, got the freebase fire. Then they came along and invented crack cocaine, which was pre-prepared cocaine freebase that was in small quantities, easily accessible and available on the street. In a certain sense, that's what's happening to the heroin scene. It's very easy to get into the heroin scene for young people now. You don't need much money. You can buy small quantities. It's attractively packaged. It's very pure, 60 to 80% pure. That's why we've had all these heroin overdose deaths.
I'm wondering, you know, you've been working with young people and who have drug problems since the late 60s. Do you think that the reasons that teenagers are using heroin today or the rationales or self-delusions that they have about the drug are any different from the ones you heard back in the 60s?
Well, in the 60s, the transition to heroin came on the back of methamphetamine here in Haight-Ashbury. Our clinic coined the term speed kills in 1968, and one of the things that we learned is the upper-downer cycle. Anytime you have a stimulant epidemic, it will be followed by a heroin epidemic. So those aspects are similar. We've had a big increase in amphetamine and cocaine. The cultural acceptance of heroin in the 90s is substantially greater, I think, than it was in the 60s. I think the youth population is more problem, too, particularly in the homeless population. We're the major service provider of the homeless youth here, and they are... This isn't the idealistic 60s, make love, not war, end the war in Vietnam. This is a very problemed dual diagnosis group that comes from all over the country. They come to California for a geographical cure, hope that life is going to be better than a dysfunctional family at home in Des Moines, Iowa, or wherever. And they find that life on the street is very hard. They're a very alienated population. Our Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics has community outreach workers that go out of our facility into the middle of the population. The good news, however, is that we know a great deal more about the neuroscience of addiction. We know a great deal more about treatment. We know a great deal more about recovery. Our clinic serves as a site for about 50 12-step recovery group meetings per week throughout the Bay Area. And the myth that the dominant culture has that the youth carry with them was that once a junkie, you can't get off, we can now do a better job with.
My guest is Dr. David Smith, founder and medical director of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the current heroin epidemic with Dr. David Smith, founder and medical director of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics. For a lot of young men who become heroin addicts, I mean, they're using heroin when at a time in their lives when young men are usually obsessed with sex and at the height of their sexual urges. And I'm wondering why you think heroin addicts are willing to kind of give up that sexual urge for the drug. It's something that most young men, you know, sex is something most young men value so much, and so many heroin addicts basically lose any interest in sex.
Well, of course, they don't know that in the beginning. And in fact, that's exactly what we emphasize in high-risk prevention in our films and our lectures and our education. When they go into this, they don't know any of that. In fact, in the beginning, it may enhance their sexual functioning. They may have premature ejaculation, and it delays their ejaculation. We found a lot of the young women that get into heroin, they've been victims of incest and sexual abuse, and they have dyspareunia or pain on intercourse. And in the beginning, heroin helps them. They say, hey, this is great. And then down the line, they get strung out, and the men have no sexual desire, can't have an orgasm. The women stop. They lose all sexual desire. They stop functioning sexually, except if they get into sex for money. So these are all issues of high-risk prevention. You talk about that. In addition, many of these young people are dual diagnosis. They might have depression. Some of them might even have schizophrenia. And they find that when they use heroin, it self-medicates their underlying psychological symptoms. They actually feel better. So,
do you try to deal with that when you're helping somebody kick the habit to kind of medicate their depression with a prescribed drug rather than heroin?
Oh, yeah. That's what you do with proper treatment. We have a large dual diagnosis segment of our clinic. So we detoxify them from heroin, evaluate them, and find that they have underlying psychiatric disorder. So we'll put them on an antidepressant medication, might put them on an antipsychotic medication if that's appropriate, and get them into a dual diagnosis group. So you have to have specialized group for dual diagnosis populations. There is a very high incidence of psychopathology in this street population, and treatment has to be based on diagnosis, and treatment has to be more flexible than it was in the past.
Do you like to work with methadone, or do you find methadone to be either unnecessary or problematic?
Methadone maintenance is a valid treatment modality. For those patients that require methadone maintenance, we certainly support it. We do not run a methadone maintenance program. We're one of the few programs that focuses on detoxification of heroin addiction and getting the individuals into drug-free recovery. My only comment is that there are these statements that the only thing that works for heroin addiction is methadone maintenance. That's not true, particularly for the young user. We just had a 14-year-old strung out on heroin, got pregnant. The standard protocol is to put a pregnant 14-year-old on methadone maintenance. Methadone maintenance very often becomes a lifetime. She'd only been strung out for about 3 to 4 months. So we worked with this young woman. She's now in Narcotics Anonymous. She's now in drug-free recovery, and she's not on a lifetime of methadone maintenance. So methadone maintenance is a valid treatment modality, but is not the only treatment modality. And I would like to make sure that these, particularly the young new user, has a good shot at drug-free recovery. Because remember, the way methadone maintenance is run now, they're highly regulated clinics, usually in less desirable parts of the city. And you sit around and with a bunch of old line junkies and learn how to be an addict. So what I think is important is that we not only have greater expansion of drug-free recovery, but we also have office-based opioid maintenance therapy. So these patients can go to their doctor with their family, and if appropriately diagnosed, can get their treatment in medical settings in addition to the methadone maintenance programs. We need much more treatment than we have now.
You've been working with addicts for over 30 years. It must be so frustrating for you to see teenagers who think heroin is really hip, or that they're so hip that they're never going to get addicted because they can try it and not get addicted because they're just too cool, or they know better, or they're whatever.
Yeah, there's a generational forgetting. You know, we've learned these lessons, but the new generation has to write their own stories. That's one of the missions of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, is to give non-judgmental information that the young people will listen to. I think that government also has to look at why their messages are not being listened to.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we have to develop information delivery systems that the young people will accept. Music is a very important vehicle. We're working with Boss Skaggs on that. For example, the young people go into treatment and the first thing they say, well, you can't ever go to a concert again because that's a slippery place. Well, these young people, music is the most important thing in their life. That's like a death sentence. So we say, work with music and recovery and have relevant role models in recovery. The painful aspect of this is this last year I have been to 3 funerals of families that I have known, good families, whose sons have died of heroin overdoses. That is, the personal part is very rough. I see death all the time in my medical practice. It's tough, but you build a wall. It's when you know the family, when you know the kid, that's painful. On the other hand, the thing that keeps me going in this field is recovery, because I also see a lot of people undergoing the miracle of recovery from addiction. Their lives are so much better. They're doing so much better. So addiction is a life and death issue, but the power of recovery is the thing that keeps me going. And I believe that if people recognize that there was a quiet revolution of recovery in the United States, where thousands and thousands of people are recovering from this potentially fatal disease, then we would better have a better understanding of what's happening.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay.
Dr. David Smith is the founder and medical director of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics.